In today's episode, we will be discussing the importance of breaking social norms. We will also be giving you tips and tricks on how to start the process.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Who Said You Have To, where we discuss how society dictates to us who we must be and how we must live our lives.
In this podcast, we will also help you find ways to choose the life you want to live with no fear or judgment.
My name is Tina Mason, and I am an emotional trauma intuitive and an expert in human communication, as well as how the human mind creates disease in the body. I am also co-owner and co-founder of Free Will Healing, where we strive to create a space for every human to heal emotionally, spiritually, and physically with no fear and no judgment.
My name is Laura Schmidt, and I have been a nurse for 17 years. I am also a registered yoga teacher with 500 hours of training. My focus is teaching gentle yoga movements to help those who deal with chronic pain. My true passion, though, is aligning the chakras to create balance and harmony within. I am also co-owner and co-founder of Free Will Healing.
First off,
yes.
Hello, Wisdom.
Hello,
we are doing this episode of Who Said You Have To live on Wisdom. We are welcoming any guests who want to come on. So we're going to start today with just a little story from, we're going to start with a story from a lady who is going to explain to us why it is so important and so vital to break those social norms.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when you don't start breaking those social norms?
I haven't heard any of this story, so,
so
it'll be interesting.
Laura gets to hear it for the first time, which is awesome, because that means guys get to have Laura's true and honest first reaction to it, and it's going to be fun. So, so here we go. I used to be a very naive, innocent person. I was the type of optimist who believed that there was a touch of goodness in every heart, a dangerous mindset to be in, I know. I realize now that seeing the world through my rose-colored glasses put a big flashing red target on my back. When you think of psychological abuse, you think of an occurrence from a stranger. In my case, it came from my mother-in-law. My husband's mother initially adored me, not for any reason other than thinking that I could be easily controlled. I was meek with a passive personality, so it made sense that I would come across like someone who could easily be influenced. Looking back on it, I cringe at how creepy the situation really was. For the sake of this story, I will call my mother-in-law by the name of Mrs. Psycho.
Not monster-in-law.
Not monster-in-law, Mrs. Psycho. And actually, when you hear this story, you'll probably say, oh, you know what?
That's accurate.
That's beautiful. Okay. That was perfect. At the beginning of my relationship with my husband, Mrs. Psycho and I were getting along great, or so I thought. She would take me shopping, give compliments about my hair and girly stuff like that. As the relationship with my partner grew more serious, she started ranting and raving to everybody in our neighborhood about how much she adored me and how I was like the daughter that she had never had. So naturally, I thought that things were progressing positively, but certain things were just really off about Mrs. Psycho. I noticed little tidbits of her behavior at parties and neighborhood social gatherings, like she would sulk in a corner, and I chalked that up to her being socially awkward or anxious. But looking back now at it, I noticed that she was always complaining about something negative going on in her life, or how she fell off her bike and hurt her elbow while riding through a construction zone, how one neighbor complained about her parking in front of his house, losing her job because she didn't get along with a coworker. The list went on and on. In every story, she portrayed herself as the victim of some unusual circumstance. One huge red flag that my mind didn't understand at the time was the story she was always telling me about her other son, my partner's brother. She said some really disturbing things about he'd held her, my partner, and his dad hostage in their home, and how he'd physically punched their father in the face. The way that she described the story made it sound like my partner's brother was a bully to the whole family. But my partner didn't seem to think that it was quite as severe as she made it out to sound. Regardless, in all of her wild stories and accusations about him, she always told me how she had scolded him in ways that I just can't ever imagine scolding my own child. What my husband and I didn't fully interpret at the time was that the underlining problem, which wasn't necessarily his brother, but the woman who had been the driving force for the insanity. Behind the psychological abuse, the behavior of psychological abuse can trigger emotional responses in very unpredictable and disturbing ways. Mrs. Psycho's behavior became even more creepy after our engagement. First, she was very angry that we didn't tell her immediately when we'd gotten engaged. Then she got angry when we changed the wedding date without first asking her permission. I knew you'd like that one. She expressed a desire for my future husband and I to live in the upstairs of her house and pay her rent. Mm. We told her that we could afford our own home and that we wanted to start a family so that that wouldn't work out. The fury in her eyes was frightening. She would look normal one moment, then if you told her something she didn't want to hear, her eyes would turn black. The memory of her eyes still sends me with a frightening chill down my spine.
That's interesting. The dark eyes that we've witnessed recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is very, very interesting. It would be interesting to me to read any studies about narcissism and if there is a physical change to the eyes.
To the eyes.
You know what I mean? Like when they're in that space of narcissism. I promise we're going to get to the breaking social norms after this story. This is just an extreme case of why breaking social norms is so important. So back to our story. So we left off with she wanted... the mother-in-law, Mrs. Psycho, wanted for the son and the daughter-in-law to move in, and they said no, and she got very angry. So she said, whenever you said something she didn't want to hear, her eyes would turn black. Says the memory of her eyes still sends a frightening chill down my spine. From there, she became increasingly controlling. Mrs. Psycho and her husband, Mr. Psycho.
Oh, so he was a psycho too?
Usually when you have a psychotic narcissist, their partner falls in line.
Okay.
Because, you know,
they just follow
the ramifications because they're not breaking social norms because society says support them, even if they're wrong or evil. That's how serial killers get away with it for so long. Anyway, sorry. Her husband, Mr. Psycho, would start showing up to our house daily or every other day. So I started counting how long they could go without seeing us. And that number came to the mere number of 3 days with no privacy. And I felt that I had to close the curtains over our windows every night. I just had the uneasy feeling. And so I locked the bedroom doors routinely before bed just to be on the extra safe side. Despite our relationship being pleasant in the beginning, I noticed that I was now feeling like I was treading on eggshells around my Mrs. Psycho, or rather landmines, it seems. Anything that I said seemed to offend her, and no matter how innocent, she would get angry at me. I used to be able to speak to her when I was dating her son, and I remember that we'd have just these very nice in-depth chats. I had allowed myself to be vulnerable with her and confided in her about how I had a lot of social anxiety and that her son came into my life during a time that I was suffering from crippling depression. I talked about how he brought a ray of sunshine into my life, thinking that speaking kindly about her son would please her, but she just had this unfeeling glazed look across her face. Hoping to mend my relationship with her, I decided to help her out one day with organizing her antiques. She had this hobby of going to auctions and buying and selling knickknacks, buttons, and stuff like that. She would get very proud of her collection of things, and so I decided to help her sort the junk to be polite. I told her that I saw beauty in these things, hoping to get back on her good side. There was some creepy dolls in the mix, including this horrifying-looking vampire doll with piercing red eyes. She said that she had had that doll for years and used to scare her sons with it when they were little kids. She laughed at the memory, and the sound had an eerie satanic vibe. She then told me a story about how a female coworker complained about her to the HR department at her company. To seek revenge on this woman, Mrs. Psycho wrote a letter that was meant for this coworker's husband, telling him that she had been cheating on him. And to remain anonymous as possible, she had slipped on a pair of black gloves, drove the letter to a faraway location so her address couldn't be traced. And I just remember feeling very uneasy about her story, wondering how she could get angry enough to drive hours away just to cause emotional harm to another human being. Is that amazing? I mean, like, are you serious? That was when I told my husband I did not want to be left alone with his mother anymore. And so my husband tried to talk to his parents about how I was feeling like I was having to walk on eggshells around them, but they flipped the narrative around and said that they were the ones that felt like they were walking on eggshells around me. During this time, I painstakingly, and I love this phrase that she uses. She says, during this time, I painstakingly realized that psychological torture exists in the form of extreme invalidation. Not having your feelings acknowledged can really drive a person crazy. Mm-hmm. I thought, how interesting. I never saw it that way, but it is psychological torture to just continuously not validate that they're seen, that they're heard, that they exist.
Yes.
So I thought that was very interesting. It was then that I felt a little more clued in on what may have happened to Mrs. Psycho's other son. I can't be sure because I never met the guy, but I think he was driven mad by his mother's severe emotional neglect. Now she was pulling the same tricks on me and my husband, gaslighting us into believing that we were just too sensitive. When my husband and I started figuring out that something was off, things got even creepier. His parents started showing up to our house to corner us into submission. What I mean is that they would tell us stories to make them seem like victims. This is a talk to text, and sometimes it doesn't convert over. Mm-hmm. So whenever we would not give in to their demands, or if we denied their request, they would use psychological manipulation by telling us that we were uncaring or ungrateful. One demonstration of this manipulation was when I became pregnant. I explained to Mrs. Psycho that the smell of pizza, this is, Laura, you're going to flip on this. Mm-hmm. I explained that the smell of pizza made me extremely sick, but this was completely ignored when Mrs. Psycho insisted that we go to a pizza restaurant for her birthday.
What a biatch.
Can you believe that? Like,
yeah.
Oh, this is something, I'm not going to say it. So I was confused with why I felt like I couldn't say no, and my husband was in the same predicament. Somehow, I think we sensed that something bad would happen to us if we did. This is also because Mrs. Psycho's husband and her sister had contacted us, telling us explicitly that we were not allowed to say no to her dinner invitations anymore. They explained,
fudge.
Grown adults. They explained that it hurts her feelings. But there was something else there that I couldn't quite explain, something hidden beneath the surface that sounded really threatening. I had no idea why, but I just did not feel safe. Then only 2 weeks after giving birth to our daughter, they didn't give birth, she did. But okay, I'm sorry, different episode. I had the creepiest interaction of my life with Mrs. Psycho. Mrs. Psycho had caught me alone on our front porch. The weather was really nice, so I was rocking my newborn daughter. And Mrs. Psycho sat down and in a quiet, ominous voice said to me, "You know you're going to have to share her," with her black eyes flicked to the infant in my arms. I know what you might be thinking, but this wasn't said in a cute, excited new grandma voice. Her voice sounded cold and possessive, with certain aggressive intent behind the statement. I naturally clutched my arms around my daughter tighter, feeling a protective instinct take over me. Mrs. Psycho had expressed to me before that she always wanted to have a daughter, but was only ever able to have sons. Maybe I was being influenced by the postpartum hormones or just overall feeling paranoid, but it was just an overwhelming thought. The overwhelming thought occurred to me that maybe she might want to get rid of me somehow and to have my daughter for herself. I later told my husband about the bizarre interaction with his mom and how I couldn't keep up the heavy psychological demands of his parents anymore. It was all taking a strange emotional toll on me, as well as strain on our marriage. And I still couldn't pinpoint exactly why. Nevertheless, they were causing us a lot of stress, which was impacted on me all the more while I was trying to adapt to my new role as a mother. They even restricted me in bizarre ways, telling me I was not allowed to refer to our daughter as my baby.
The fuck?
I had previously posted on Facebook about how excited and happy I was to be a new mom. I posted a side-by-side picture of me with my daughter with the caption, "She has my eyes," which was meant to be a lighthearted and innocent. My mother-in-law commented on the post with, "My son had something to do with it."
Oh, my Atlanta.
Which only put a damper on the mood, but also felt creepy. Why did she have to mention something that we already know? It was almost as if my happiness made her more enraged. I know that one. I really felt like I was starting to go crazy. The stress was enough to make me physically sick. At first, my husband was very hesitant when I told him about my concerns, stating the usual spiel that was natural for him to say that they were his parents and he couldn't just drop contact with them. But even then, something in his voice contained fear. It wouldn't take long before he would realize how fucked up the situation actually was. The incident that drove him to the point of cutting off his parents happened when they cornered us in our own living room, demanding that we watch their unruly dog while they went on vacation for 5 days. My husband almost caved, but stayed firm when he told them that, no, we have a 2-month-old baby to look after. His mother gave us a murderous glare, and it was enough to make my skin crawl. It was like when the look someone gives you right before they're about to attack. It is like something that is from the movies, very primal and hateful. I thought for sure that she was about to lunge at me and wringing her hands around my neck, causing death by strangulation. I was terrified. Mr. and Mrs. Psycho eventually left our house, but they were clearly angry that they weren't able to convince us to conform to their will. We know this one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. My husband and I had a dark, suspicious feeling that something bad was about to happen. First, we received lengthy emails from Mrs. Psycho, mostly insulting me. She said that she thought that I was brainwashing her son, and she went on to portray herself as a victim. She used the knowledge of my anxiety disorder to make an argument that I was mentally unstable, dangerous. She threatened to post about me on Facebook and make our life a living hell if we didn't apologize for deviating from what she wanted. At the same time, she told me that I was dead to her and listed all the mistakes I've ever made in the past, as well as criticizing my faults. I'd be lying if I said it didn't sting a little. My husband and I needed space to recover from the emotional wounds that she had inflicted on us. We remained silent, not wanting to engage with her any further. My husband and I were pretty scared, as well as being hurt. And we spent most of our days cooped up in our bedroom, not knowing what to expect. But we stayed strong through the process of separation from the toxic relationship. Mrs. Psycho proceeded to make good on her threat, posting about me publicly on Facebook. She said that I was batshit crazy. She even went a step further, saying that I had borderline personality disorder in all capital letters. This came out completely out of nowhere. She knew I had anxiety, but I'd never mentioned anything about her being borderline, about me being borderline, because I wasn't diagnosed with that. But it didn't end there. She also posted a dramatic story of how we had banned her from seeing her grandchild. An active smear campaign against me is what, okay. Oh, yeah, this one. Oh, Mr. and Mrs. Psycho actually went door to door to everyone's house in my community, posing as good citizens to warn everyone about their extremely dangerous, manipulative, 5-foot-tall daughter-in-law. The neighbors didn't react exactly in the way that she had expected, though. They were more weary of her than me. Instead of ruining my reputation, which was the desired effect, most people in my neighborhood were majorly creeped out by Mrs. Psycho's efforts, and they were equally creeped out by Mr. Psycho's willingness to go along with the whole thing. I guess after years of being beaten down with his wife's abuse, he was just an empty shell of a man, a flying monkey to the proverbial wicked witch. There are a few doctors and therapists in my neighborhood who couldn't officially diagnose her since she wasn't their patient, but they said off the record that they believed Mrs. Psycho may have been projecting that she was confessing like how she potentially was very, very dangerous while pinning it on me. This, along with some stories of Mrs. Psycho's interactions with other people in her neighborhood, confirmed that something was disturbingly off with this lady. This information made the situation all the more unsettling when Mr. and Mrs. Psycho showed up to our house for what we suspected would be a confrontation. My husband and I were watching Survivor, which was probably good. Probably they had some tips and tricks there.
Yeah. We have a guest waiting and we will get to you shortly.
I am almost done with this story and we will grab you. Mr. and Mrs. Psycho showed up to our house for what we suspected would be a confrontation. My husband and I were watching Survivor in the living room with our baby when the doorbell rang. He crept to the front window to appear behind the curtain to see who it was. I could see fear on his face. "It's my parents," he said. And my blood ran cold. I immediately ran upstairs with the baby, pausing only to tell him that it was his choice whether or not to answer the door or not, since they were his parents, but that me and the baby would be hidden away. And as I made my way up the stairs, I could see my husband hovering by the front door, conflicted. He didn't know what to do. Meanwhile, I could hear jostling at the front door, like his parents were trying to force their way inside our house with a spare key. I thank God to this day that we had just changed the locks a few days before so they couldn't get in. I proceeded to run upstairs and close the bedroom door behind me, blocking me and the baby inside. I held my daughter close to my heart, tugging wildly against my chest, and then there was a knock at the door. But it was just my husband, and he said that he had not let them in. I shudder to think about it. If my husband had chosen to answer the door, after that, my husband and I both blocked them. I skipped this part here. My husband then got a text from his mother saying that he was a coward hiding behind his keyboard. I don't know what would have happened if my husband had chosen to answer the door, but I shudder to think about it. My husband and I both blocked Mr. and Mrs. Psycho after that. We've blocked their phone numbers, social media accounts, everything. They thank God moved away to another state shortly after, and we have not spoken to them for over 2 years now. And our daughter is growing up in a loving environment free of toxicity. Sadly, we had to block some of my husband's other family because they kept telling us that we should talk to my in-laws, which, by the way, feels a lot like being told, please contact your abuser. For this reason, I sometimes feel like it would have been better to have been physically abused than mentally abused, because then there would have been some form of visible evidence of the harm that they had inflicted. In the meantime, they have so far made no attempt to contact us with any apology or anything. Instead, they once reached out and told us to have a shitty anniversary. You two are a match made in hell, which only further secured our decision to cut contact with them. I have since armed myself with knowledge. So that I will be less naive about creepy behavior in the future. I've studied up on narcissism and the negative psychological impact that some people can have on others through gaslighting and invalidation. I hope that everyone listening out there may be aware that not all abuse is physical.
Yowza. Sounds like a lovely time.
Yeah. did we lose our guest?
Yes.
Oh, you can call back or you can request to be a guest again. We'd love to hear from you. So Laura, in that lovely story there, let's look at the social norms. We want one of the social norms that I see is, okay, you know, I'm dating this guy and I'm going to marry him. Mm-hmm. I want to spend the rest of my life. We're going to have kids. So his family has to be my family.
Yeah.
They have to like me.
Yes.
And I'm going to do whatever I have to do
to make them like me.
Yeah,
I don't follow that one, so I can't participate.
Nor do I.
I don't have contact with some family by choice, you know.
I as well.
Blood is not thicker than water sometimes.
I am going to say that I was reading that story, there were some notes of my mother-in-law in there, and I was like,
Yeah, not in mine. It's not my mother-in-law. I'm not throwing that out there.
No,
we will bring that one back. Like other extended family. Definitely I see, and I've witnessed people be that way, where they just take the psychological abuse from family. Friends were usually easier to cut off if they have this kind of behavior, but family, we try to, well, they're family, which to me is crock of shit.
Well, blood is not ownership.
Correct.
Blood is not ownership.
Mm-hmm.
People should earn through earning respect, earn the ability to be in your life. And it shouldn't just be something that you're just allowed to do.
Yeah.
So another social norm that I noticed was, hey, husband, your mom's really freaking creepy. Mm-hmm. And the things that she's doing is not okay.
He seemed to be quite supportive of her in that.
Well, you know, and then he goes to them and says, hey, and here's something very normal. Narcissist, you know, my wife feels like she has to walk on eggshells with you. Okay. And then mom and dad say, oh, no, we feel like we have to do that because of her behavior.
Yes.
And I mean, yeah, I get it. Being stuck in that in between your parents and your wife, mm-hmm. or your parents and your husband, that absolutely just sucks.
Yeah. I mean, overall, I mean, the story is horrible, like to have in-laws like that and treat you like that. But she, even though she says she felt the psychological, but she was pretty strong through it all. Like she spoke up and she did not kiss butt.
Yeah.
You know, in the beginning, she seemed
right.
She seemed there.
Yeah. Now that we understand why it's so important to start paying attention to behaviors.
Psychological, you said, not just physical, psychological.
And, you know, she fell into all of these categories of, I need to do this because society says this is my mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. I need to do this because it's my husband's parents. I need to do, you know, it can turn very dangerous very quickly.
Yeah.
And so what we want to
I want to know what happened to the other brother.
I know. Because
they never saw him and she never talked about him again. But anyway, that was just curious.
You don't think that the mother-in-law killed him off, do you?
I don't know.
Anyways, you would think the brother would know where his brother
is.
Okay, anyways, because she said she never met him.
No.
Okay, so that leads us into what we want to talk about today, the reason how to not fall into being prey to narcissistic behavior, mm-hmm. and that is breaking social norms.
Yes, there are some social norms that you should break.
Oh, there's a lot of them you should break.
Yes, I know, but
there are some that you should keep. Like, you know, there are some that, you know, are part of our everyday social interaction that are healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Laura, can you?
Yeah, like allow some personal space between you and other people.
Yeah, especially now in the COVID era, you know.
Right, everybody's all paranoid.
Like,
now,
not be all up. And even even before COVID.
Yeah.
I know that you love when people crowd you in line and like are right up on you. I know that that's your favorite.
Oh, yes. Nothing that a little passing gas won't get.
I love you. So, my girls would be mortified when they were, you know, teenagers, because if people would be like right up against me, you know, like right in my business, I would turn around and say, I am so sorry, but I'm just not sexually attracted to you.
No, shit.
And it was always
male or female.
It didn't matter. Yeah. And it would be great. Like the cashier's face was always fabulous, because, you know, the cashier sees this all day long,
they're
you know,
pushing up on,
and yes. the cashier's face is always just like, they want so bad to laugh, but they, you know, yeah. try to maintain.
I usually say, can I help you?
Yeah.
I do.
Are you looking for something up there?
They have this shocked look on their face and just stand back. So,
yep. So the other thing is taking turns during conversation and trying to avoid interrupting others while they're talking.
Yes.
So that's a social norm. That's a good one. We
respectable,
want those.
Yeah.
And those ones actually help us to let other people know what we expect during social interactions, and they help facilitate social connection. And it is essential for health and happiness.
Yeah, but there are some others that we shouldn't follow or choose not to follow. We're not going to tell you what to do.
We're not going
to tell you. Y'all make your own minds up.
Yeah. So here are some of the things that Laura and I believe. Well, the first one drives me insane.
Drives me nuts.
So what's the first one?
Stop asking how are you unless you really want to know. People will be like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. I'm like, really? Are you? Because you don't look like it. So just
my favorite is like when they'll say, you know, like in a drive through or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's what society has taught them.
How are you?
Yeah. And I will say, do you want to know the truth or do you just want a polite answer?
Yeah.
Like, are you just being polite?
Yeah.
And in all the years that I have said that, I have only had one person say, I'm just being polite.
Well, good.
And it was like, I like you.
Yeah.
I like you.
Yeah.
That one I didn't give a long, drawn-out story to. And I just said, okay, then the polite answer is I'm having a great day.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that one drives me bad. And also when people leave and they're like, have a great day or have a good day. I'm like, you know, have the day you deserve. How about that one?
I like that one. Well, yes, because it is not our place to judge. So if we just say have the day you deserve. I think you're hitting all the bases there. So what is number two?
The next one is talk to strangers.
Ooh.
That's funny. This one came out on that little Nextdoor app we have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the lady's very upset because she says hello to everybody. She goes on morning walks and hikes and she says hello to everybody. And she said 90% of the people don't say hello back. So there was an argument of other people like, well, he should be polite and say hello back. And then other people are like, mind your own business. They don't want to say hi. They don't want to say hi.
Wait, was that your post?
No. But it's the one I liked. I don't have to acknowledge you. Is it a polite thing to do? Yes. Maybe I've got other things going on in my mind and I just don't really feel like acknowledging you at this time. And being friendly and smiling. I'm not going to be ugly back to you.
Right.
But I don't. She was very upset that people wouldn't acknowledge her on her walks and her hikes.
Well, maybe she just needs some extra love.
Maybe. She's not going to get it, apparently, on her hike.
So, you know, as kids, we were told, and we also tell our own children, you know, why I told my children,
don't talk to strangers.
Mm-hmm. Don't talk to strangers. If a man with a puppy walks up and says, or with a leash and says, can you help me find my puppy? You start screaming, mom, this man's trying to abduct me. Mm-hmm. That's you know, the rule in my house. But I was, you know, a helicopter parent.
Yeah.
So. But what this article that I was looking at in Psychology Today is, and I'll just read this, says, many of us tend to avoid talking to strangers, especially in crowded spaces. We assume that talking to strangers will be awkward and unpleasant, or we worry that others will not be interested in talking to us. And yet, research shows that our concerns about talking to strangers are overblown. Talking to strangers often goes better than expected, and even in brief moments of connecting with a stranger can improve one's mood and well-being. In one study, commuters on a train in downtown Chicago had a better experience when they talked to strangers than when they sat in silence, even though they predicted the opposite result. This was true for extroverts and introverts. So, Laura, you want to explain the difference between extrovert and introvert?
Me and you.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly. And you know what? Can anyone guess which one's which? Another study found that taking the time to talk to the coffee shop barista increased people's sense of belonging.
Yeah. See, and my issue with this one, if I am initiating the conversation, is because I felt a decent vibe. 99% of the time that another person initiates the conversation is to bitch about something. And you know what? I don't care.
Well, and I suspect, because I know you pretty well, that when they do start to bitch, you literally look at them and say, I don't care.
Not in those specific words, but it is that the energy that they feel shoot out of me trying to shut them down is probably.
Is it the energy or the look in your face?
Probably both.
Okay.
Probably both. So, and that's my issue with straight. Like, I would love to hear, you know, I hear you come back like, oh my gosh, I met this person and they told me this amazing story. And I was like, that's awesome. All I heard about was, oh my God, you know, blah, blah, blah.
The neighbor's dog pooped in my yard.
And I'm like, seriously, come on. So anywho, and maybe that's just the type of people I attract. I don't know. They're like, oh, she looks miserable. Let's go tell her my miserable story. I don't know.
Or maybe it is because you are definitely 100% a warrior. Uh-huh. And that warrior energy of, you know, they're like, oh, she can avenge what's been done wrong to me.
Yeah.
Whereas they look at me and they're like, oh, no, she
needs some love.
She'll just go over and give them love.
Yes. So, yeah, that's not gonna give them a puppy.
Yep. Number three.
Well, it says there, just try to break the norm of staying silent. Say hi. Right. But then it goes back to the lady on the hiking trail. Like, most people were actually annoyed that she was saying hi.
Well, but that comes down to also what we've talked about in the past of, if I say hello to you and you don't say, you know, we're strangers, right? Mm-hmm. I say hello to you and you don't say hello back. That has nothing to do with me.
Correct.
It's all within you.
Mm-hmm. And people actually acknowledge that too. They're like, it doesn't have to do with you. It means that they're going through something or... You know,
well, and I do feel like it is a little bit arrogant to assume that just because somebody, a stranger, says hello to me, that I am now required.
Yeah, obligated.
Mm-hmm. Obligated to speak to them. You know what I'm saying? Because.
Yeah. Yeah. They do say, like, if somebody makes eye contact with you, that means that they are willing to engage.
Interesting.
So if somebody's on a trail with their head down, I'm not going to be like, hello.
Hey.
Look at me. Look at my new Lululemon tights. You know, it's if they look up and make contact and smile is a different for me.
We moved from Texas to the state of Washington, mm-hmm, when the girls were little. And, you know, you know Texas. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody's hi and hey and, you know, let's have a barbecue. Yeah. And, you know, when we would walk into HEB, was like our big grocery store there. Mm-hmm. And they had greeters there that would smile and, hey, how are you doing? Yeah. And did you smell the, you know, the barbecue out front and, you know, whatever. And when we moved to Washington, and we were there for 6 years in Washington, the very first time I walked into Walmart in Washington, and just me and Kayla, mm-hmm, this kid made eye contact with me. So I did what every Texan does. Hi, how are you doing? Yeah. And I swear to you, this like 20-year-old kid said, do I fucking know you?
Oh.
And I went, I don't think so.
Oh.
And he said, then why the fuck are you talking to me?
Oh, damn. See, I wouldn't go to that extreme.
I know that you wouldn't. But that was kind of the theme there. I think that it's because they don't get enough sun.
Yes.
I think that's what it is. They don't get enough vitamin D. But I didn't realize that over that 6-year period of being there, that I had learned to keep my head down and not make eye contact. Yeah. Because when we came back to Texas, the first time I walked into HEB and I had my head down and the little greeter guys, hi, ma'am, how are you today?
Yeah.
I jumped about 3 feet. I thought someone was coming up behind me to mug me or something. You know what I mean? And it's so easy to get in that frame of, you know, to have this openness and then
to change who you are for where you are.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Because of the society around you. Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Be true to yourself.
Absolutely. So number three is talk, don't text.
No. No.
Oh, Lord, Lord, Lord.
If it's long and it's going to be a long text, I get it. But if it can be said in text, send it in text.
This is about breaking social norms. This is the one you're working on. I guess number three is the one you're working on.
I guess.
It says in here, it says, technology has dramatically changed the way we communicate in the modern world. According to a recent Gallup poll, sending and receiving text messages has become the most prevalent form of communication among U.S. adults under 50. In other words, texting has become the new norm. There are many advantages to texting.
Yes.
But research shows we may feel more connected with others if we pick up the phone or make a video call. What's important is being able to hear the other person's voice. The voice communicates interpersonal warmth, which is harder to convey via text. If you really want to connect, make a call or at least send a voice message.
So see, this needs to go back to the day when you got charged per minute. That way I could be, at least in Argentina, right? The phone call, you got charged per minute, so I knew the call would probably be about 3 minutes, right? You're like, blah, 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 boom, hang up, right?
And you're still like that.
I know. I guess it's also the warrior in me. It's like, okay, get to the point. I don't want the fluff, right?
Cut all the fluff
Cut
out.
Cut it all out. And so that is my issue with the text, don't call. I was never, even as a kid, I would remember my friends, you know, we all got our phones in our room. Mm-hmm. I think I used mine twice, like... Seriously. And they would be on the phone for hours. I would see them. And you watch the movies and everybody's on the phone. And I'm like, oh my God, that's torture.
Laura.
I love you.
I love you. Bless your heart.
Bless your soul.
Bless your little heart. So, another way to break a social norm is to talk to people.
Did you bring all this up for me?
I don't really know what you're speaking of.
I don't follow social norms.
No, you
do. See, just them saying that I have to break this norm is going to make me opposite.
Well, nobody in here said you have to. This is just ideas.
Who said you have to?
So, Laura, you want to read number four to us?
Put your phone away during social gatherings. I totally 100% get that one. So it says that in a survey, 89% of cell owners report using their phones during their most recent social gathering. Even though it's a normative behavior, using your phone when you're with other people can have negative social consequences. So totally. I mean, it feels my son has friends over and he's on his phones talking to somebody else. And I'm like, what the hell? Why are you not talking to the person in the room with you?
Exactly.
Oh, so-and-so messaged me. Well, tell them to wait. They're not here. That one I don't get. And I think it's very disrespectful. It's like, yeah. I don't care that you're here.
The next line says it's called fubbing.
Ooh, you're a fubber.
You're a fubber, which is the act of snubbing someone by looking at a phone.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes people feel ignored or rejected.
Yeah. Yeah. That one I 100% agree.
And, you know, we have a rule at our house that dinner table, mm-hmm. no cell phones at the dinner table.
Yeah.
And it is very funny because, you know, when they were younger and kids are like, wait, what do you mean? You can't. I'll put it on silent.
Uh-huh. And it's like, that's not the point.
And my girls would say, dude, if my mom even sees you glancing at it, she's got a little basket. She going to come around, say, put it in there. You'll get it back after dinner. And they wouldn't believe them. And then next thing you know, there's that basket in their face saying, put it in there.
Yeah.
Because we have, especially, you know, like for you and I, we do two podcasts. We run a business. We both have families. Yeah. We don't have a whole lot of time. And so, you know, there's certain times of the day that we get to connect with our families. For me, it's dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know? Us as well. We all try to sit down and have dinner together.
Yeah. And just going on with that putting your phone away, it says even the mere presence of a phone can diminish the quality of social interaction. One set of experiments showed that simply having a phone out and visible during a conversation lowered people's sense of connection to the other person and the quality of the conversation. This was especially true during meaningful conversations.
Well, yeah, because you don't know how long their attention is going to be on you. Like, are they waiting for a text? Are they waiting
for...
I've had people tell me, look, I'm waiting for a very important phone call or a very important text.
And they I need to have phone this here,
there.
Yeah.
But they're not constantly looking at it or viewing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I know that there's nothing worse than, you know, you're in the, like, you work yourself up to have this conversation with this person mm-hmm. that's, and it's very, very important to you. And they're sitting there looking at their phone the whole time or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the rule in our house is we specify because lots of times it's just a quick question or something, mm-hmm. but we'll specify, you know, hey, can I have your attention for a moment? And we know that means put down the video games or put that down the phone or whatever so that we can communicate.
Yes.
You know? So this is going to be lots of fun. This next part is going to be lots of fun.
Okay.
Because what I did was I just copied and pasted what one site said to do to start breaking social norms. Okay. And I started removing some of them. And then I went, okay, these all really suck. So I'm actually going to leave them here just so that we can actually go through them and be like, this is why you don't want to do that.
Awesome. Okay.
So, but there are two rules when you start getting to a space of starting to break social norms. There are two really big rules that are actually really, really important. And Laura, will you read those for us?
It says rules for norm violating. Be safe. This rule trumps all other rules.
And number two?
Only break one norm at a time. Oh, what? I can break more than one at a time. While violating the norm, act totally normal in every other. What the hell wrote that?
I told you.
Violating many norms at once simply makes you look like a crazy.
A crazy what?
Teenager. Thus, you aren't breaking a norm. People expect teens to act crazy sometimes. Was this like on TikTok or something? What the heck?
I don't know. It was something that our intern sent me.
Shh. Well, we're going to have to talk to her. Does she think I'm crazy?
Well, so these are some of their ideas. And Laura and I'll take turns on this one. Mm-hmm. So number one, sit down with a stranger at a restaurant, even if other tables are clearly available.
That goes back to number one at the top, like personal space.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. They're like
contradictory. 2 to 3 feet from a stranger.
I mean, so how I would modify this would be ask permission from a stranger to sit with them. Like if there's, you know, and I do this, if there's like an elderly person who's sitting.
I'm still reading.
Well, if there's someone sitting, you know, by themselves or something. Stop. You're killing me. You're killing me, Smalls. You're starting to step away from
it. Wait until I read it.
But I will. There. I am so sorry, guys. This is 100% on Laura. But I will say, you know, hey, are you eating alone? Could I sit with you? You know,
that's where the RBF comes in handy.
What's an RBF?
The resting bitch face. Because nobody approaches me.
I approach you.
Sit down with the table. Speak to an acquaintance at an unusually small distance. Stand right next to another person in an elevator when there are only two of you there. Surprise a same-sex friend with a kiss on the cheek. Well, that's not a... But the whole thing in the elevator, I feel like pressing the alarm button.
Yeah, I know, I would too. Because so breaking the social norm, I get that, but that doesn't mean invade other people's space.
Let me tell you what I did to somebody that used to do this in Argentina. I had to go everywhere by bus, right? And same schedule every day. And I had a stranger that would always like to come and stand behind me. And I was 14, 15 years old. And every time, right? So one day I had my, what is that? Is it a protractor? The one that has the sharp thing at the end for math?
Yes. Yeah.
I think it's a protractor. No, anyway, it has like a very point and you make the circle
with it. It's like the compass thing. I know what you're talking
anyway,
about.
Anyway. Yeah. So I took it out of my backpack and I stabbed him in the leg.
Coffee and wine.
Seriously. So somebody comes up to me in an elevator and standing right next to me.
The elevator's like this huge elevator and there's just the two of you and they nestle up next to you. These are like, honestly, like these are
in an article.
Yeah, these are in an article. But literally, these are things that I would teach teenagers to watch for.
Yes.
To watch for of a sexual predator.
Yeah.
Right. So number two, be unusually helpful. Offer to help people at Best Buy. Nowhere else, just Best Buy.
Best Buy.
Buy a small present and give it to a barely known acquaintance. Pass out nickels to strangers on the street.
This must have been written before all the inflation. Because nickels, they're going to be like, take it. You need it more than I do. Those are acts of kindness. I don't know if they're a social norm.
This really sounds more like instead of breaking social norms, It sounds like a bunch of teenagers like pranking, like just like having fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because read number three.
It says break rules for eye contact. Make too much eye contact. Stare. Or too little. Talk to others while looking at their forehead or ear. Stare at strangers walking past on the sidewalk and blink.
Blink excessively.
So again, eye contact. I remember my days of being single and being at the bar, and my way to show a guy, hey, I'm interested, was the eye contact.
Right.
And he was a stranger.
Right.
So I can understand that one. The whole like, look away, look back, look.
Yeah.
Bite your lip, move your.
I can't, like, my vision of you is more of like walking up to him being like, hey, you, me, you let's dance. Go dance.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, that's more.
Just dance.
Just dance. Okay, sorry. So number four, dress inappropriately. Dress for a different season. Dress too fancy or too casual.
No, that one's just
that
fun.
That one's not horrible.
That one's fun. I have a friend that likes to go very fancy everywhere he goes. And that's what he enjoys. So, and it's usually a talking point. People will come up and be like, hey, either to make fun or to be like, hey, you look awesome. You look amazing. So I could see that one. So, if you're wanting to engage in in a conversation with strangers.
So, Laura, I really am looking forward to you reading number five.
Okay. Oh, shit. Reek norms of social etiquette. Cut into the middle. They done mess with the wrong Aaron. Cut into the middle of a line. Ask someone you don't know for his or her seat in a public place. Applaud at the end of the class. That's like applauding at the movies.
I don't think that's bad. Like applaud at the end of a class. Like, I don't think that that's horrible.
Randomly greet people as they walk into school with a handshake and a good.
I don't see anything wrong with that one either. But cut in the middle of a line. Ask someone you don't know for. That sounds very much like narcissistic behavior.
Yeah. Entitlement.
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah.
Entitlement. Mm-hmm. All right.
None of these people actually cut in a line in front of me because they would not have written that.
No, because that would not have been pretty.
No.
So number six.
Follow the
norms of another culture. Try bargaining for the price of something. Bow to people or kiss them on the cheek to greet them. Hand people things with two hands. Oh, that's interesting. When, like, that's a thing. Look at the floor when shaking hands with someone.
So that one's actually, it's funny because I am not one to touch people. I am not a fan of shaking hands. And I mean, I do it. And again, back to social norms, I'm not a fan of it. So why the hell am I doing it? Right. And I've often considered like the Asian culture, I guess, to bow.
Right.
Which to me is like a sign of reverence of energetic, like here.
I agree.
Because to me, since we work in the energy healing world, to me, any physical contact actually either takes energy or gives energy.
Right.
And maybe at that time, I'm not willing to do either. So I have actually been considering bowing to people. Not like full bow, but just a nod in approval.
Just so everybody here knows. Because I love each and every one of you so very much, I'm going to record it. And then I will tell you where I'm going to post it live at.
Namaste, motherfucker.
So now let's go with some that I think aren't horrible. Okay. That really actually will help you with kind of getting over that fear of breaking social norms.
Okay.
Right? So walk on the wrong side of the sidewalk.
What does that mean?
So,
like,
you know,
West
like
Side Story, I'm going to cross over to.
Because, you know, like normal traffic is right, left, like everybody's, okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gotcha.
So mix it up.
Okay.
Mix it up. And then I love this one. Have an animated conversation with yourself in public.
Why?
Because I'm just going to tell you this right now that this has happened to me.
Well, it happens to me, but it turns out they're talking into their Bluetooth.
Oh, no, I'm talking about me being the animated.
Oh, no, I understand, but I've seen people.
Yeah, and you know, it is a getting over our fear of judgment or fear of what people are going to say. These are just ideas of watch how people, like the next one. What's the next one, Laura?
Look up all the time.
And how many people do you think are going to like stand next to you and stop and just look up?
I used to do that. I would stand on the corner and just look up. And people,
that doesn't surprise me.
Yes, it does. And people would stop and start staring. And then I'd just walk away while I was still staring. But it's funny, the whole have an animated conversation with yourself in public, and not in the bathroom.
Not. Who so, does number two work for?
No, so I will tell a quick story. My mother was in the bathroom, and she is very societal norm. She's going to follow what is respectful or what she's expected to do. And she heard somebody asking a question in one stall. She was in another, and she started answering. And till the lady, I think, finally said, hold on, there's somebody here talking to me in the bathroom. She was on the phone.
Oh, Lele. You're so sweet, Lele. We love you.
So do not have that animated conversation with yourself in the bathroom.
So Laura's very favorite, say hello to everyone. Mm-hmm. See, that lady read this list.
Yeah.
The lady who goes hiking read this
read
list.
The list. Yeah.
So Laura, next one. You'll love it.
When people ask, how are you doing? Tell them about your whole day.
So back to what I told you
before. Yeah, they'll stop doing it. They'll be like, I ain't asking anybody else.
Because when I ask people, do you really want to know, are you just being polite? And I said, only one person has ever said, no, I'm just being polite.
Yeah.
And so I will tell them how my day, exactly how my day is going, mm-hmm. you know, at blow by blow from when I got up.
Yeah.
If I ever go back and it's that same person, they usually just say, hello.
Yeah, I try not to ask a lot of people. I do ask like clients because I need to know physically, like, how are you feeling today physically to know what experience I'm going to give them during yoga, right? But not to hear about their day.
Yeah, but I just because, you know, our modality is so different. I do ask people, how are you doing? And I mean it.
Yes.
Like I'm truly.
Yeah,
like,
tell me the full story.
Tell me the whole story. Leave nothing out because we need to see where we need to go today, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this next one, not so much. Wear your clothes backwards.
See, a lot of it seems just like attention seeking.
Really, honestly.
Yeah.
Don't take your hat, coat, and gloves off even inside.
See, I don't because I'm always cold. So
and I'm not okay. I'm not okay with the next one.
Violate people's personal space. But see, and at the very top of the article, it states, give them their personal space.
So my husband already does the next one. I didn't realize he was doing it to try and break social norms.
Whisper when you talk.
And then I say, did you say something? Or I'll say, are you going to answer me? I did.
Yeah, but it was very.
I didn't hear you. No, I did. Yell when you talk.
No, that probably won't bring me down. Ask strangers if you can cut in line. If they ask why you need to, then say you don't really feel like waiting long.
Hey, at least you're honest. I could totally see you doing that.
For sure.
I just really don't feel like waiting. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
Okay. Your parents' home, ask for permission to do everything. Get a drink, use the bathroom, watch TV.
like you're a guest.
Okay. My daughters don't. This won't. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. We're all like, mm. So it, does, it says don't flush when you're done. Talk to others while they are busy.
These are all rude.
To someone in another stall. No.
Lele.
Yes. Ask for their toilet paper. Face the back of the elevator. Oh, my Atlanta.
I actually like that one. That would be fun.
I know. No, the one I read was like, if somebody talks to you in an elevator, go, you can see me.
Oh, that's horrible. That's horrible. Oh, my gosh. You can see me? I've been here forever. Okay. We are going to be wrapping this up here pretty soon.
Yeah. Honestly.
I like the never break eye contact with the instructor. Talk and then raise your hand. But, these are a little bit on the ridiculous side.
Yeah. So going back to social norms, it basically is you be you, right? Yeah.
Be respectful of other people.
If you don't really care about somebody whose day is, don't ask.
Yeah.
If you know, because I honestly, I can't stand that. I'm fine. You know, they've come in here to see us because their day is not fine, right?
Yeah.
And just talk to whoever you want to talk. If you see a stranger and you feel like talking, give them a pleasant smile and some eye contact and engage in the conversation. But other than that.
So we're going to be wrapping this up in just a few moments. So if anybody has anything that they would like to add, please feel free to...
Any pet peeves about social norms. Yeah. That's what we should call it.
Yeah. Right? Please feel free to request to be a guest. I see all the applause. Somebody request to be a guest. We'd love to hear your beautiful voice. While we are...
Oh, here we go. We got one.
Oh, yay.
I want to hopefully...
Mr. Oh, it's Mr. Will.
Here we go. In 3, 2, 1.
Hello, handsome.
Hello, Will. Hello.
We're not going to ask you how your day is.
I will ask you.
I had one.
You had a day?
Tell us.
Tell us. We want to know. Well, I want to know. Laura probably doesn't, but that's okay. I want to know.
No, I was going to comment on your question.
Which one?
You tell.
My day was splendid. I am.
Oh, yay.
My good. Life reflects my glory. I just can't live any better.
That is so amazing, Will. See, you're the type of person that makes it worth asking, how was your day?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just judging on this moment, though. I'm not thinking about 4 hours ago.
But that was a truthful, how your day, you try to make your day go, right? Not the, how are you doing? Oh, I'm great. And yeah, it's not. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. Some people don't really want to hear, well, yeah, it's been kind of rough today and blah, blah, blah. They don't want to
hear. And you know what? If you do tell people that, sometimes you'll see their eyes just shift away.
Or they glaze over.
Yeah. Or they want to fix people and that's their mission in life. And then hopefully they're.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you.
With good intention.
Yeah. We are big proponents of free will, which means if you feel like you need help, it is my job to stand back and let you ask me, not push it upon you. Mm-hmm. So tell us, Will, tell us of a social norm, right? Something that society tells us that we have to do that you have broken out of or are trying to break out of.
Okay. Well, the first thing that came to mind is kind of deep.
You like deep.
It's deep.
That's what she said.
You two are fun. I just come up.
Coffee and wine, Will. Coffee and wine.
It's like you're in the same place. We're so envious. Anyway, I'm assuming you're in the same place. Are you in the same place?
Yeah, we are. We are sitting right next to each other.
Okay.
2 feet apart.
Could, trust me.
Technology could make it work, so you could be on two different lines talking to your same device, but
thankfully we both use deodorant today, so we're good.
Oh, splendid. Too much information, but thank you. So my thing that just came to mind is it bothers me when I see people apologize for crying.
Oh, good one. Yeah. Oh, that is a good one, Will.
On all different levels, you know, even people that are kind of like teachers and coaches that teach like accept your emotions and blah, blah, blah. And they'll still be like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm crying. It's like, so please, everyone, you don't have to apologize for crying. You can just allow your emotions to be okay.
That's a huge one. I wonder where it came from.
Yeah, apologize. Do you know where it came from, Will?
Yeah, they used to beat you up if you were a boy.
Oh, I know that one. I mean, not because I'm a boy, but because I was raised in that era.
Yeah, you don't cry. I'll give you something to cry about.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm already crying. I don't need something.
Yeah. No, really, I'm good. I'm actually proficient in this. I don't need any help, but thank you. I appreciate it.
Let me process this emotion. And
then... If I need something more to cry about, I'll let you know. So, no, that's a really good one. And, you know, when you very first started to talk, I thought you were going to say, you know, people apologizing, right? And because I have this thing about we should never apologize if we're not sorry or if we did nothing wrong. But then when you added the apologizing for crying, I'm like, oh my goodness, that is literally like my new social norm. Not I don't apologize for crying, but that's my new social norm that I'm going to educate people on
apologized, by the way.
I did. Did I?
Yeah, you said you were sorry for doing something.
Oh.
Never mind.
I was like, okay, well, I love you, Will. But I want to start pushing that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I want to start just reiterating that to people of, you know, not
giving permission.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's okay.
Well, allow them, let them know that they can give themselves, that they don't need mine, that they can give themselves permission. That they have the free will to express whatever emotion they choose.
Yeah, because it's repressing emotions that cause the problems.
Hello. Mm-hmm. You are absolutely correct. Well, it looks like we're going to lose you here in about 10 seconds. Well, thank you so much for coming on. You absolutely 100% just made this a better podcast. Okay. Yes, please do follow us, and we'd love to follow you back. Yes. So,
anybody else have any interesting either pet peeves or something that we didn't discuss that are as a social norm that you're trying to break through?
I really did love that one.
Yeah.
And because, you know, that's not something that I, as a woman, right, I don't normally have someone tell me not to cry.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's more like maybe I would do it to myself. So, but I would never think to apologize for crying.
Yeah. But so many people do. You know, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Well, yeah. We have it all the time when people come in here and they're like, I'm so sorry, I'm crying. And I'm like, why?
You're releasing that emotion.
Yeah, exactly. Crying is actually a huge part of energy work. So
yes. It's
one of the ways. I would rather them cry than fart or, you know, burp or, because those are all ways
to stand right up next to you.
You know I'm going to do that to you from now on, right? Actually, so when we get done here, I think what we should do is I think that you and I should go and one of us stand right next to Sergio and one of us stand right next to Julian.
Oh, you're freaking out.
They're practitioners in our office here at Free Will Healing. So what I hope everybody takes from today is for us to start taking our life, start living a life of peace, love, and joy, which is the absence of fear. For us to start living the life we choose, we have to start being comfortable. It is beneficial to us to start being comfortable with not being afraid to break the social norms, not apologizing if we cry, you know, not saying, how's your day? If you really don't want to know. And if somebody asks you how your day is, answer them. Mm-hmm. Answer them. And because it seems to be those of us that maybe are paying attention here a little bit, we have to, it feels like we need to start leading by example, showing people a different way because they're so entrenched in this societal fear. And you know, people tell us all the time, like, how do you guys do this? Like, how do you, you know, take on 1,800 square feet more and not be afraid? And you've only been open for 5 months and then you did this, you know. And it is because we choose not to have fear. And
build it and they will come.
Build it and they will come. So thank you all so much for being on here today. And
have the day you deserve.
I love you, Laura.
It's true.
It is true.
I hope everybody deserves a great day.
There you go.
But
that makes me feel a little bit better.
But have the day you deserve.
And I say, everyone, have an amazing day and know that you are loved as you are.
Peace. Tina and I know the things discussed today are not what society has taught us to believe, but I choose to believe in my own ability to see what is truth and what is not truth.
I challenge you to join us in believing your own ability to find your truth, not what society has dictated you must believe to be accepted or loved.
The truth is, you are loved exactly as you are, right here, right now. No human is more vital than another. You matter.
And you have the free will to walk your own path with no fear and no judgment.
So, Laura, do you want to tell these wonderful people how they can help us keep the lights on and keep this show coming?
Of course. Please visit our show notes and there's a link to our Patreon account there. If you have suggestions for topics that you would like us to cover or you have a question, please feel free to contact us via email at whosaidyouhaveto@gmail.com. If you would like to know more about Free Will Healing, Tina or me, visit our website at www.freewillhealing.com.
If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. Reviews are how we grow our listenership and allow everyone the courage to think for themselves with no fear or judgment.
Please check the show notes for all of our Who Said You Have To social media links on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, where you can follow or subscribe to get updates for any upcoming events or personal appearances near you.
Laura and I encourage you to have faith in yourself.
And remember,
Who said you have to?